Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, what a huge week Penn State football. The big loss to Michigan. Disappointing performance again by the offense. And top it all off, we got rid of an offensive coordinator. A lot going on here.
A whole lot going on. And listen, at the end of the day, Jim, I obviously don't know all of the inner workings here. I think James Franklin has to feel confident and comfortable with the coaches he has on the staff. And, you know, I know some people, and there may be truth to it, feel like it's, hey, we're just going to make Yurcich the scapegoat here. It feels like there was a little more going on to me in talking to a couple people on the beat, that there was some, you know, strong pushback here to what was talked about during the week and what was actually being implemented on Saturday, at least in particular with the Michigan game. You know, offensive coordinator has been a struggle here. And I think Penn State has gone out and made what you thought were really good hires. And it just hasn't panned out, with the exception of Joe Moorhead. I don't think at any point you've said, okay, man, this is looking like exactly what you want in a big time offense and feels like everything's moving in the right direction. So I do think this is a big hire, obviously, for James Franklin after this season. I think it is important that they get it right, whatever that means. And I'm not even sure what that means, but I think, you know, Penn State, obviously, to me now, Jim, next season has to get into the playoffs with the 12 team format. And I think really has to win at least a game in those playoffs to feel like this thing is still moving in the right direction. Again, I think James Franklin's under zero pressure this season, but I do think it starts to come into play next year. Certainly if they take a step back next year, then I think you start to really wonder about the overall direction. But I think what you perceive as moving forward is going to be interesting next year as well, from an administrative standpoint and also from a fan base standpoint. So, again, I don't think there's tremendous pressure this year, but I do think now getting this hire right and feeling like this thing is moving in the right direction next year is important. And listen, we don't know, obviously, what's happening on the defensive side of the ball as well, with Manny Diaz and the possibility that he may be departing as well. Again, we'll see how that plays out. I don't think there's anything definitive there. And I don't think Manny Diaz just jumps at the next opportunity. I think he's got to feel like it's a good fit for him to take a head coaching job somewhere. But I certainly expect that he'll get some offers this year. And so then you're back in a place where I think you have an experienced team. You have some things to feel excited about, but the possibility that, again, you're going to be hiring two new coordinators as at least a distinct possibility to start next season.
Okay, let's go back a little bit, Jeff, before we start talking about future and where they go from here. Let's talk about what led to this. Now, a couple years ago, they brought in Kirk Ciarrocca. He was here for 1 year. It was the COVID year. One could argue he really didn't get a fair shake, wasn't able to really meet with the players, the whole COVID thing. And he only got 1 year before he was let go. And the reason, as it was seemed to be told to us, was this was the great white whale, Mike Yurcich. This was the guy James Franklin wanted all along. So what went wrong? If this is the guy he wanted, was this not the guy who was going to implement the James Franklin vision?
That was certainly the expectation. And yeah, it's interesting, Jim, that they waited until after the Michigan game, but not until the end of the season, because it felt like they left a lot on the table against Ohio State. in terms of offensive schemes and packages. And James Franklin said as much. And I don't know if maybe it was after that, it's like, hey, we need to do what we said we're going to do against Michigan or else. And then, you know, maybe that came into play. Obviously, I don't know what all went into the firing here. And I also don't know what this offense is going to look like the remainder of the season. And I'm also curious about that. You know, do we see any substantial changes, or is this pretty much, okay, this is what the offense is this year? You would think we're going to see a little heavier dose of the running backs and a little more with the tight ends, since those are the two coaches that are kind of taking over the offense right now. And I do think if you're looking at the two strengths of this team offensively, that would be it. I think the two tight ends the two running backs are your starting point for where the strength of this offense lies. So I am curious to see how this team finishes up. Rutgers obviously has a very good defense, not so much on the offensive side. And interesting side note, Mr. Shiraka is in charge of that offense. It just got shut out last week. So I don't know, Jim. I do think that they have got to get this figured out for next season, and they have to get the right hire. And again, I don't even know what that means, and I don't know what I need to see out of the offense to be convinced that they've made the right hire. Because the truth is, Jim, I mean, this offense, it has not looked spectacular throughout the season, but it has been very effective and very efficient, save for the two biggest games that everybody, of course, is going to define this season by. But really, outside of that, I mean, Penn State, yeah, slow starts, different things here and there that we didn't like about what we were seeing. But overall, in terms of the points on the board and the comfortable wins against teams that you'd expect to get comfortable wins against, again, save for Indiana, Penn State did that. Not just won the games, but won them handily at the end of the day. So, you know, I do think this is James Franklin acknowledging that they've got to be better against Michigan and Ohio State, or next year, you know, against the Washingtons and the USCs and the Ohio States of the world. And, you know, I'm really curious to see what this next hire is. And as I said, I'm also going to be very interested to see just what this offense looks like here in the two remaining regular season games and the bowl game this season.
I keep going back to what happened. I know we'll have time to get to going forward and what to expect and what we want to see. I'm still trying to figure out what went wrong. And I brought this up on a show earlier this week, the idea of you read what the fan reaction to things. And it's fascinating to me. You got a faction of them saying, how come you're not running the ball more? You have another faction, how come you're not throwing the ball more? And I'm not sure it's quite as simple as that. I think it's about when are they running the ball? When are they passing the ball? And there just doesn't seem to be any cohesive plan or structure to how they're running this offense.
I would agree with that. But I also think, Jim, it's more how they are doing both of those things. And I don't think they're doing them the way that you would think would capitalize on the skill set. Again, you have not seen a lot of attempts, especially in the big games, to get Nicholas Singleton out in space. And, you know, out on the edge where you would at least think he can be more effective. Now, I think they've used Catron Allen pretty effectively, even in the Ohio State and the Michigan games. But I don't think they've done a great job of using the tight ends and of exploiting the middle of the field, which is where you would think the tight ends can really make the biggest difference. And so, yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily, hey, they need to run more, they need to pass more. But I think it's you have a five-star recruit who has a big arm, let him throw the ball downfield. Now, again, maybe I'm pinning this in the wrong place. Maybe they are trying to do that and Drew Aller is just making the reads and does not think he ever has that opportunity downfield and is taking the safe passes. I mean, I don't know that with certainty, but I do know that when you have that type of recruit back there, even if you're wide receiver, and I'm with everybody, I think, is agreeing that the receivers are not doing a great job of separation, although I also think coaching is part of that. There were a lot of times on Saturday, this Michigan game, Jim, where they only had two receivers out in formation and out on routes, and they were keeping people in. And that's great that you're trying to protect Drew Aller, but if you only have two options and those guys are covered, you're stuck. And I just don't think this offense just did not feel to me, Jim, like it was progressing. I really was okay with what we saw the first couple of weeks and the checkdowns, because I thought it was setting things up for, okay, this offense is building and it's going to unleash itself as the season goes along. And I very wrongly thought, okay, the Ohio State game is where you're going to see this thing kind of come together and everything will be emptied out of the playbook and you're going to see the big play opportunities, even if they don't capitalize on them. And you did not see that much at all against Ohio State. And you really didn't see it at all against Michigan. And I think, again, it's a combination of things. I don't think it's necessarily they didn't run or pass. I think it's that they didn't, it didn't feel like they were using the strengths of the team to their utmost in the biggest moments. And that they, again, to me, from the outside looking in, and I don't know all the little nuances, really, other than the Maryland game, Jim, it never felt at any point this season like there was, okay, we're building upon this to set up that. And it did feel like that to me in the Maryland game, and that's why I was a little more hopeful with Michigan. It's like, okay, man, they figured some things out, use Perbola, get them in the mix, do some different things here offensively, air it out a little bit, use the middle of the field. And it seemed like all of that went back in the, you know, cupboard and then into the top desk drawer for the Michigan game. And that's when you needed it, not against Maryland. I mean, it was neat to see against Maryland. And again, if it was, okay, now we set all of that up and we're going to build upon it after Maryland in this Michigan game, man, I'm all on board. But it felt like instead they just kind of went back to being the shell that they were in the Ohio State game, where they were playing ultra conservatively against a team that once it had the game in control was able to do exactly that and run the clock out.
Jeff, I think you hit some really great points, and I want to follow up on them as we start quarter two. Stick around for that.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to quarter number two of the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Jeff, when we wrapped up quarter number one, you were making what I thought were a couple really good points. I had asked you about the fact that there are fans who say, oh, they need to run more, they need to pass more, which I do agree. That's oversimplifying things. I think that's a fan. You see one completion and say, why can't we do that more? You see one good run, why can't we do that more? But it's what runs they're calling and what passes they're calling. Let's start with the running game. And you know, everyone who listens to our show knows my pet peeve about the read option. If the quarterback's never going to keep it, why are you running that play? There was one play, Catron Allen, I think it was 39 yards he got, where he got outside the tackle. They had two linemen pulling out in front of him. It was explained to me, it's called a pin and pull. The tight end on the left side was pinning his defender. You had two linemen pulling. That, to me, I don't feel like we see that enough. And to your point, is that not what you should be doing with Nick Singleton?
Yeah, and I think that, again, being creative and doing, I just didn't think there was a lot of misdirection used throughout the season to this point. And to me, again, get Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton in the backfield at the same time. Give people some different thoughts here about what the possibilities are, and use, you know, one of them as a lead blocker on various plays, or again, do the play action and see if you can set something up down the field. It did not feel like there was a lot of, hey, we're going to do this early to set this up later in the game. Now, again, maybe they were doing that, and for whatever reason, either Drew wasn't seeing it or the defenses adjusted and never gave the opportunities, but it did not feel like, to go back to that kind of cohesive game plan idea. Again, I think they did an okay job mixing up the pass and the run and even on downs and situations. It's just that it didn't feel like they were playing, to me, to their strengths and to allow the running backs as much opportunity as they could to get the big plays that we talk about. And certainly, you know, Drew Aller, to me, you do have to allow him to throw the ball down the field. And certainly when you have the tight ends that Penn State does, exploit the middle of the field, exploit the middle of the defenses, and set stuff up so that, okay, now you've shown this, the defense adjusts this way. It just didn't feel to me at any point this season, even the games where Penn State did a pretty decent job in terms of putting points on the board, it did not feel like it was, okay, we've done this to set this up. Now we're going to capitalize on that and set this up. It was like every drive was, well, let's try this. Let's see if this will work. Instead of, and again, the exception was the Maryland game where it did feel like they had the defense on its heels. I don't think at any point other than that Maryland game did it feel like Penn State really had defenses guessing and trying to wonder and figure out what was coming next. And, oh, my gosh, there's just an onslaught here from Penn State. It was, okay, Penn State did an effective job of taking advantage of what the defense gave, and credit to Penn State for doing that. But, again, it didn't feel like Penn State was on the attack and had defenses really trying to react and be able to kind of keep them guessing. It was defenses able to make plays, Penn State being able to exploit, again, weaknesses that were allowing short yardage plays. And to Penn State's credit, they didn't create penalties or turnovers, and they were able to, again, throughout the first half of the season, effectively just consistently march down the field. But you'd like to see that happen and then have that open up. Okay, now we've done this. Here's the big plays. Here's the opportunities to adjust to what we're seeing with the defense and create more opportunities. And it just never felt, at least, like that happened really throughout the entire season.
Well, that's a good point too, Jeff, about running this play to set up that play. And we never saw that cohesion. I've often used the example of the T formation and what they did with it last year. It was every game they did a little bit more with it. It started with a quarterback sneak. Then it was you could go to either running back. Then they motioned out of it. It was something new. Every time the defense started to think, oh, we see this formation, we know what we're going to get, you gave them something new. And another example of that type of play calling is the wide receiver screen, that quick bubble throw to the wide receiver. The tight end, say, gets out in front as a blocker. How about you run that once or twice? They get conditioned to it. The DBs are charging hard. That blocker then releases. So you did one thing to set up another. Never felt like we saw any of that, Jeff, with this offense all year.
No. And the other thing, Jim, that was really disappointing to me, especially, again, coming off of the Maryland game, I really thought with the way they used Bo Prabula there that, hey, all right, now you're going to see, again, it doesn't have to be a bunch of plays throughout the game, but short yardage situations, right? Does that not make sense to get Bo Prabula in there? And when you're on a second and one, instead of just to give the defense another option, hey, now we legitimately need to worry on this read option. And Prabula has enough of an arm. I mean, I don't think it's a situation where defense is, all right, Prabula's in, we know it's a run. I don't think that's the case. And I think if defenses think that, again, you ought to be able to exploit it. It just does not feel to me like they have, again, used the personnel they have to maximum effectiveness. And to me, that's what the coordinator's job is. It's let's put this team, my kids, in the best position, give them the best opportunity to go have success, make plays, and win games. And I think conversely, you look at what the defense does, and they do that. And, you know, the defense wasn't perfect against Michigan, gave up a couple of big runs in key situations. But, man, that defense, and by the way, the defense never created the turnover, and it became apparent to me very early in the third quarter, Jim, that the only way Penn State was going to win that game was either they had to get a big play with the punt return game or a big turnover from the defense. One of those two things absolutely had to happen for Penn State to win that game, because you had no faith that the offense was going to be able to move with, you know, any efficiency on a long drive. So that you had to create a short field opportunity through either the kicking game or your defense, and that never happened. And obviously, I'm certainly not pinning the loss on the defense by any stretch, but I do think that, you know, there is some plays that could have been made and needed to be made for Penn State to win the game in the other aspects of the game outside of the offense, defense, and special teams as well. And but that being said, the defense was, you see them using their personnel, taking advantage of the talent that they have and creating, you know, unique and creative ways to allow those players to go out and make plays. And at the end of the day, again, maybe they don't. And I'm not sitting here telling you that if Penn State does what I'm suggesting it should have done offensively, that by gosh, then you win the Michigan game. I don't know. I think that Michigan team's really, really good. But I think you give yourself an opportunity, a better chance to win the game if you're throwing to the tight ends, if you're getting Nicholas Singleton out in space, if you're bringing Bo Prabula in short yardage situations or on a two-point conversion. That to me just makes a ton of sense and should be obvious. And it's just frustrating that this late in the season, it doesn't feel like Penn State has kind of figured out what it actually has and how to use what it has offensively.
Jeff, I'm going to have to disagree with you. You pointed out if they did what you said, it doesn't guarantee victory. I think it would have. I think name you offensive coordinator, we, you know, implement the Jeff Byers plan, they win this game. But you brought up a good point, an interesting point with the defense getting put in position to win. And I am definitely not putting anything on the Penn State defense. They played well enough to win. But I found it interesting some of the things that Michigan's offense did to the Penn State defense. We all know what Penn State likes to do on third and long. And guess what? Michigan's coaches figured out a way to exploit that and take advantage of Penn State. And they ran the ball a couple times on those third and longs and converted. That was coaching. That was scheming. And I've yet to say about Penn State, oh, they schemed their guys open or they schemed that win. We haven't seen that on the offensive side. And the other thing I wanted to comment on that you brought up was bringing in Bo Prabula. When they ended up with a short yardage situation to get a first down first, then first and goal inside the five, they had five cracks at it and made a grand total of 1 yard. Yep. If there was ever ever a time to go with Bo Prabula. Was that not it, Jeff?
It was. And that and the two-point conversions, again, if you're going to run those, and I'm not a fan of Penn State running either of the ones they did given the game situations, but if you're going to do it, right, Prabula gives you just a better chance, clearly a better chance to create that indecision by the defense, and in short yardage situations can be the difference between converting or not. Again, to me, it was just very frustrating. By the way, just to jump back to the defense real quick, sometimes it is just the bounce of the ball. Abdul Carter did create the turnover opportunity that I'm talking about, and I do want to be fair to them. Sometimes the ball doesn't bounce their way. I mean, that hit was a hit for the ages that he put on Blake Corum. And I think, I don't know if anybody definitively said this, but I think that's where Corum's gash came from. I mean, he absolutely blasted him. And the ball obviously is on the ground. If Penn State gets it, who knows? Penn State did not take advantage of so many opportunities throughout the course of that game. I don't know that they would have there either.
And that is what is so frustrating about this team, is they had the opportunities. All right, Jeff, we're going to pick up this conversation in quarter number three. Stick with us.
Hey, guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are going through everything that happened with Penn State football this week, the disappointing loss to Michigan, the change at offensive coordinator. And Jeff, one of the things I want to mention with this game, this particular loss, and coming up as a follow-up to the loss to Ohio State, the fan reaction, I feel, was different in this one. There have been times over the years, the losses to Ohio State especially have been disappointing. You have a lead in the fourth quarter, a double-digit lead, and you lose it. But over the years, fans have been disappointed. They've even been upset. This one, though, they seem mad. It's a different reaction than we've seen before. My thinking is it's because the fan base, and I think the team, the coaching staff, believed this year is different because this team is as talented as Michigan and Ohio State. You follow that theory?
Well, a couple of things. One is, the frustration, I think, is understandable. The reaction in the stands with some fans is obviously not acceptable and can't be tolerated. And to be honest with you, Jim, I think is bordering on obscene. I'm with everybody that wants Penn State to win. And by the way, I think this was one of the worst. And I know James Franklin gets criticized for big game coaching. I do think this was one of the worst jobs that Penn State as a whole, James Franklin, has done in coaching. I think there were a lot of really, really dumb decisions. And so I'm with you on the frustration. I'm with you on, hey, how many times can you bang your head against the wall and not learn from it, all of that. That being said, and it's hard to do in the moment, and I'm not sitting here telling you that this is what I was doing in the moment as I'm watching the game Saturday. I'm cursing under my breath as I'm watching this stuff.
It's like, well, you You weren't always under your breath.
Well,
remember,
that's true
I was
too.
With you, Jeff. So I heard some of those comments.
But listen, to be verbally and bordering on physically abusing a coach as he walks off the field, I do think it is important to every now and then take a step back and keep some stuff in perspective. And several things here. One, it is a game. There are a bunch of college kids, 18 to 22, 23-year-old men, who are out there trying, right? And they're making mistakes. And, yep, the coaches, being human beings, they're making mistakes. The officials, being human beings, they're making mistakes. So, and by the way, in my job, occasionally, I've made mistakes.
No.
Many of you listening in your jobs, and I'll bet sometimes it's even dumb stuff. It's like, hey, I don't hear myself. Why am I not going over there? Oh, I forgot to turn the mic on. I've only done that how many tens of thousands of times over the years, and every now and then you start. So it's idiotic. It is really dumb stuff. And listen, I think there were some really dumb decisions by Penn State and that coaching staff on Saturday. That being said, I know that we look at turning the corner as you've got to beat these Ohio State or Michigan teams, but I would argue that if Penn State finishes out, and there's still work to be done, Penn State has to win this game against Rutgers coming up on Saturday, and I don't think that's an easy task. And then Michigan State, obviously, with the Black Friday night game out in Detroit. But if Penn State finishes up with two more wins here, in one way, and it's not going to be praised, and I understand it as far as it goes, but in one way, Penn State will have turned the corner. Because James Franklin, prior to that, during his tenure, every season you could point back to one game and say, oh, man, that is a game that Penn State should have won. Like, they clearly had the better team. Whether it's Illinois or, I mean, you go back, there was one game every year where it's like, that Penn State was favored in. Let's just go with the betting line. Well, last year, they didn't lose a game that they were favored in. This year, they have not lost a game, and I don't think they will, that they have been favored in. So, you're hammering James Franklin, and listen, I'm with you that there is deserved criticism for the coaching in this past Saturday's game, in particular, I think very clearly. But the criticism is that, hey, you're not winning games the last 2 years against teams that are top five teams in the respective seasons and that are also not losing games to anybody else in the conference and very, you know, only against teams that are playing for the national title outside of the conference. Well, that is, on one hand, again, it's frustrating, but you look around college football outside of Georgia, Michigan, and Ohio State, and actually Michigan, even in the playoffs, and I get it, it's in the playoffs, but outside of really Georgia and Ohio State, what team is it, what program is it that over the last 2 years is winning every game that it's supposed to win? It does not happen very often. And so it may sound like faint praise, but it actually, I think, is significant. The Penn State is winning the games, and not just winning them. Again, with the exception of Indiana this year, they are winning comfortably at the end of the day over the teams that they're supposed to beat. And again, not where you want to be, I understand it, but and I keep falling back on this probably too much, Jim, but Penn State fans, you know, I keep seeing or hearing, you know, man, for the money James Franklin is making, you better be beating Ohio State and Michigan. Actually, for the money James Franklin is making, he's the 11th highest paid coach in the country. He has Penn State in that 7 to 10 neighborhood in terms of where they're at as a program. I think he's actually giving you more than what you're paying him for in terms of where Penn State's stature is in the country. I don't think Penn State fans want Penn State to spend more money on a football coach. And obviously, if you did what some fans want and buy out James Franklin's contract, again, we talk about the chasing points in this Penn State-Michigan game. I don't like chasing points, but I'd rather be chasing points than chasing money. And I think if Penn State did what some fans are wanting them to do and, yep, go ahead and buy Franklin out and get another coach in, and then that coach doesn't work out, you're going to start chasing money. And that's what Texas A&M is doing right now. That is a much worse place to be than chasing points in a game against a team that is favored and expected to beat you.
Well, I'd like to react to a few of the things that you said here. First of all, Jeff, there is zero, zero, zero place in this world for some of the things that the fans did, especially, you know, throwing the water bottles on the field. You do not do that. You do not. Some of the language and cursing in a family environment, again, you just don't do that. And there's always going to be that element of the fan base. You've got over 100,000 people there. A handful of them, please do not judge the whole fan base on those couple idiots. But here's where I'm disappointed in all of this. It's with the national media. If you look at some of the reaction to both the Ohio State game and the Michigan game to Penn State's performance, yes, it was disappointing. I think if you ask any Penn State player, any Penn State coach, James Franklin on down, they'll tell you they were disappointed in those performances. But you have an elite defense performed well in both those games. The offense, no doubt, underperformed. The funny thing is, when I see these high-scoring, you know, 47-44 games, you say, wow, those were two good teams. Nobody's saying, wow, what a bad defense. They won, but they gave up 44 points, you know, or they lost and gave up 47, so they're not a good team because the defense obviously wasn't there. Penn State, you got a bit of the reverse. Now, if you want to get on James Franklin for not winning enough of the big games, I think it's legitimate, but where do you go from here? And I just picked this up this morning, Jeff. Someone put out something, and they were trying to paint with the broad brush 10-year contracts. And in college football, these long-term contracts, there are death sentence. And he lists Jimbo Fisher, Brian Kelly, Mel Tucker, James Franklin, Mario Cristobal. Well, why does James Franklin go into that group? Texas A&M would kill for 10-2 right now. USC would kill for 10-2, and they have the best quarterback in the country. So I think lumping James Franklin in with those people and the national media reaction to him is ridiculous. And I didn't mean for us to go off on that tangent, because I'm as critical as anyone for this performance against both Ohio State and Michigan. But with that said, you know, I think of most of the teams in the country would kill to be in the position that Penn State is. And it's fascinating to me that just a couple years ago, Michigan was in the same spot or worse, and they were ready to get rid of Jim Harbaugh. And by the way, Ohio State, God forbid they lose to Michigan again, you're going to hear cries for, you know, Ryan Day's scalp also. Yep. So, you know, to think that James Franklin is the reason that this program is being held back, I think is just plain wrong, Jeff.
Yeah, I do too. And again, I share in the frustration, and I was more disappointed and frustrated with the showing against Michigan, because I wrongly thought that they really had learned some lessons from the Ohio State game and then Indiana, and then what we saw against Maryland. And again, I get there's a significant difference here between Maryland and Michigan, but the approach that they took with Maryland is what I was excited to see carry over to Michigan. And again, it at least felt like there was none of that approach in the Michigan game, that it was back to, let's just try to avoid making mistakes instead of, hey, let's go try to create some things and see if we can get Michigan on their heels. At no point in that game did it feel like Michigan was trying to figure anything out in terms of what Penn State was bringing. And it did feel like Penn State pretty early on was panicking and feeling a lot of pressure in that game.
All right, Jeff, that has to be it for quarter three. I promise, quarter four, we're going to start looking ahead, looking forward to what Penn State can do with a new offensive coordinator. Stay tuned.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking about all the big changes at Penn State with the dismissal of offensive coordinator Mike Yurcich. We have interim co-offensive coordinators in Juwan Sider and Ty Howe. And Jeff, I do want to look forward to what we're going to look for, but the one last thing is with James Franklin, my first instinct with dismissing Mike Yurcich, and I think a lot of people were this way, he got scapegoated. But as I looked at it more and heard some of the quotes from James Franklin, and, you know, a couple of those whispers that you and I will often hear from different folks near the program or in the program, it seemed like James Franklin and Mike Yurcich have been on at odds for a while on how a game should be called. And I think it went from subtle to out and out. In James Franklin's press conference, he essentially said, yep, we talked about doing these things. Come game time, it wasn't done. Yes, we talked about it. It almost sounds like insubordination that James Franklin wanted certain things and he wasn't getting it from Mike Yurcich. So this just seems like the logical move that had to be made.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And James Franklin, again, you've got to be comfortable and confident with the people you have around you. To me, it's to James Franklin's credit that he has shown a willingness, a proclivity to make moves when he feels they're necessary. And clearly, after the Michigan game, you knew in the press conference, not necessarily that Yurcich was going to be fired right away, but you knew James Franklin was displeased with his offensive coordinator and with the way things unfolded in that Michigan game. So, yeah, it is strange because Yurcich seemed like such a home run hire when they got him, and it seemed like that was it was the guy that James Franklin really wanted. I mean, that's clear, and I think that the timing of I think Soroka did get a bit of the short shrift because the timing was there to get Yurcich. And so I think that adds to kind of the disappointment and the frustration on the offensive side of the ball is, it seemed like they had their guy. You had a year under your belt. You had this stud quarterback. Everything we talked about going into the preseason and throughout the year, it just felt like everything was in place for this to be a really good offense. And again, in fairness, it has been a good offense, save for two games. But it's two games where you needed the offense to show up in a big way, and instead it just wilted in both cases. And, I'm not sure where Penn State goes. I certainly think, Jim, I mean, the first call has to be to Joe Moorhead, right? I mean, the obvious sometimes is the right thing. Now, I have no idea whether Joe Moorhead would entertain, would even take the call. I don't know if he's hell-bent now and he just wants to be a head coach. But from a prestige standpoint, right, I think coming back to Penn State, if you felt like, hey, we could legitimately be a national title contender next year. You know, I think being an offensive coordinator of a program that is in the running for a Big Ten or national title, you know, again, from a prestige standpoint, certainly matches being a head coach of a MAC school. But listen, there's autonomy. There's some other things that maybe Joe Moorhead values in being a head coach. Again, I just don't know what his mindset is. But to me, right, the only time in the James Franklin era where you felt really good about this offense was when Joe Moorhead was in charge. So I think that's at least worth the phone call, and that's where I think Penn State and James Franklin should start. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't plenty of other possibilities and opportunities to get this thing going in a big way in the right direction. But to me, Joe Moorhead would be the first call, and I think would be the first option that I think would get the fan base, and I suspect the players, excited as well.
I'm not as sure as you are, and let me give you a couple theories on my part. I think Joe Moorhead would want real autonomy as the offensive coordinator. James Franklin, he talks about that. He talks about, I want a head coach of the defense. I want a head coach of the offense. That sounds good, but I'm not sure that's what he wants, because he brought in guys from the outside. He first brought in Shiraka, then brings in the home run hire, as you mentioned, with Mike Yurcich. I think with the idea that, hey, this guy's going to be implement what we want, and it didn't work out that way. And even to the point where I think James Franklin said, you know what, this guy isn't doing the stuff even that I tell him to do. You know, I'm still the head coach, and I'm saying, and a lot of people have said to me, well, how come James Franklin, he's the head coach, he's got the headset on, why didn't he just overrule him? Jeff, I'll use the analogy of, take a look at your own workplace, and if you've ever managed people, and there's someone who's not doing things exactly the way you want, your first instinct isn't to fire them. You know, you talk, you try to work it out, maybe even say, hey, he said, it's my job, trust me, I can do it. And then you have them fail at it, and it happens multiple times. You ultimately have to make the move. Here's where I'm headed to, Jeff. James Franklin brought in the home run hire, and it didn't work. Does he not want to now decide his own fate? And he's kind of even talked about, the collaboration wasn't where I wanted it to be when we had Mike Yurcich here. And, you know, the knee-jerk reaction, gee, now after one day with these two co-coordinators, I'm seeing the collaboration. I like that. I have no inside scoop, no inside information, but I wouldn't be stunned if somehow we end up with, say, Juwan Sider and or Ty Howe as the offensive coordinators, because he feels they're part of the program and will implement what he wants. How's my theory, Jeff?
Yeah, I don't think James Franklin can afford to do that, because I think that they need to make a bit of a splash here with this hire. And with Moorhead, the one thing there, Jim, is, I mean, I think you would be willing to give him autonomy because you saw what he did the last time and how it worked. And now with his head coaching experience, to me, I would think, I mean, I'm trying to put myself in James Franklin's shoes, which is very difficult, obviously, to do. But I think I'm thinking, listen, we need to get this right offensively. I think Joe Moorhead, is going to get it right. And if you can get him in here, let him run it. I'm not saying you never have any input, but I think Joe Moorhead, again, has earned that trust. And again, I have no idea. I mean, this may be a moot conversation. Joe Moorhead may have absolutely zero interest in being an assistant coach anywhere, let alone back at Penn State. I have no idea. I just think that would be the first call. I don't think Penn State ends up with either Sider or Howell, regardless of how this thing looks the next three games. I don't think that's going to be the long-term hire or solution at offensive coordinator. I think they need to go out and get somebody who has a track record and a resume, and that you feel, and I mean, again, I'm going to argue against myself because that's what you but I do think you've got to keep trying to get the guy that knows, okay, has done it before and knows that he can do it again with this offense. And I just don't think you, because of where this program is right now, and you feel like you are just that kind of half step away from being where everybody wants this program to be, I don't think you can bring in somebody that's, okay, we're going to grow on the job. Now, again, I'm not in the room. Maybe one of these guys is, hey, everybody is gravitating toward him, and you can get everybody on board, and you're seeing some creative ideas that have been suppressed with Yurcich there. I mean, I'm not ruling out the possibility, but I'll be very surprised if Howell or Sider end up being the offensive coordinator next season. I think they're going to go get somebody with a proven track record that they feel is the next home run hire. But that being said, it's obviously more difficult than we make it out to be. And it's not just Penn State's offensive coordinator position that's a struggle. I mean, you look at it felt right when USC hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, that's a home run. Look out. The Trojans are back, baby. Well, how's that working out? Scott Frost at Nebraska. I'm still beyond perplexed that didn't work. I think Scott Frost is a terrific football coach. That felt like a great match, and it obviously didn't work. So it's not, there are no guarantees. Joe Moorhead, as much as I'm advocating, would love to see him come back, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that absolutely guarantees that Penn State then next year goes at least 11-1 and gets to the semifinals of the college football playoffs, and this offense looks great. There's so many different things that come into it, the personalities, the overall chemistry of teams, coaching staffs, all of it. It is not an exact science, and there is no hire. And that's why I caution Penn State fans who want to get rid of Franklin. I just think it's much more likely, no matter who you bring in, that you take a couple steps back than it is that you take that next half step forward that everybody wants to see.
Well, I'd feel more comfortable about it if you had an obvious guy on your staff. And you're right. You pointed out, Juwan Sider's been a running back coach for about 14 straight years now and has never made that jump to a coordinator. And you have to ask why. Ty Howell, still very young and inexperienced. I get that. But I guess it's just, has James Franklin been burned with his last couple outside hires? If I had to bet inside or outside, yes, I'd still bet outside hire. That's the logical thing to do. But just something inside me gnawing away at James Franklin, his quotes and talking about that lack of collaboration makes me say, might he do this? And it will also be interesting to see in the interim, as you mentioned, you got a running backs coach and a tight ends coach. It'll be interesting to see how they will make use of the running backs and how they will make use of the tight ends. If anyone should be doing that well, I think it would be those two. All right, Jeff, unfortunately, that's it. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are